Today's News Talk Radio, TNT with Trish Wood.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Trish Wood Show. My name is Owen Stevens, filling in for Trish Wood. I'm very excited to be here to be able to bring you commentary from at home where I am in Michigan right now. I just moved, as well as abroad and throughout the globe. This is going to be a great show. I have a lot of guests that are on today. Thank you for tuning in. I want to shout out TNT right now. In a day and an age where the internet has seemingly been hijacked by the radical left to introduce and shove down your throat a radical agenda, it is more important than ever to use the internet in ways that can combat the way that they are using it. So what they're doing right now with Facebook, with Instagram, with all of these social media platforms, including the internet broadly, you know, Google, if you look up a conservative opinion on Google, you can't even get it sometimes. The censorship is absolutely unreal. But conservatives need to start using the internet to their advantage, and that is what TNT does. It is so great that we have a team of expert people that are in the background right now. My producer, Alex, doing a wonderful job. Dave, who I work with regularly, as well as Jennifer, who has gotten a bunch of guests today. These are people that care about what they're doing. They are excellent at their job, and I want to thank them right now. So wherever you are, you know, they're not going to be able to hear you, but give them a quick applause for all the people that are behind the scenes doing the real work that is so important to make sure that we give them their due. So now I'm on the air today with Matthew Arrett, who is absolutely amazing. He has written this great article I want to talk to him about, it's really insightful, and we're going to get to a section really about energy and about nuclear energy, solar and wind power, specifically as it relates to developing third world countries, specifically Africa, and the African countries that are struggling with energy production at a time where it's more critical than ever to make sure that we expedite their development. These are countries that are developing fast, but due to the agenda of the radical left, they are threatened. They are threatened with climate alarmism. They are threatened with this climate change culture that almost demands that we must repress success, that we must take what has worked, that we must take capitalism, which is one of the single greatest tool for human benefit, like to benefit humankind. That's the single greatest tool we have. It's liberated billions of people out of poverty. And that is exactly what they are opposed to. They are opposed to prosperity. They are opposed to human dignity, individualism, freedom of thought. And most of all, they are opposed to God, the Father, the Holy Spirit, and the Son. They are opposed to Christian and Judeo-Christian values that are at the basis of this country. I'm joined right now by Matt Arrett. Matt, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing very good. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. This is going to be so fun. So I want to talk about your article that you wrote. Specifically in the section, I'll just get to the article title. It's Russia and Africa, Connecting Continents with Soft Power, something that's very, very interesting. And I want to read a quote from the section titled Nuclear on the Move. You write, in 2018, Putin stated that Russia will light up Africa and emphasized that Russia would help all nations with oil, gas, and nuclear development projects. One of the things that struck me so much about that statement was how starkly it contrasts with some of the goals of the WEF and the World Economic Forum and what other Western countries besides Russia are trying to push, namely this green energy, this, you know, reliance on wind and solar, which do not work in the same capacity as oil, gas, and nuclear development do. So what are your thoughts on that contrast right there?
Yeah, no, indeed. And that was a breath of fresh air. A lot of people are not aware, but Africa has been under a conscious policy of technological apartheid now for generations. There was an effort by the Pan-African Union that had many of its leaders assassinated or overthrown by CIA, MI6 style coup d'etats throughout the 60s, 70s, even into the 80s.
Yeah.
People, you know, this is, I mean, it's a long list. There was an effort during this time to acquire advanced technologies and leapfrog out of a dark age situation of after, you know, this is what years of having been exploited by the British Empire, French Empire, Belgium. I mean, it's a horror story. What was done to Africa to keep them underdeveloped and better exploited. And so the idea by many of these leading figures, including Kwame Nkrumah, Patrice Lumumba, it's a big list. Was to use the best of human knowledge to leapfrog. People like John F. Kennedy, great leaders of the West, Charles de Gaulle were more than happy to help by providing nuclear power, the idea of providing Africa with the means of production, the means of having the intellectual resources to do it themselves. You know, the adage of better to teach a man to fish than to give him a fish. That was the ethic of the West before we allowed ourselves to succumb to this sort of fifth column deep state coup d'etat after JFK's murder and the ouster of de Gaulle. And so since then, there's been a conscious effort to keep Africa underdeveloped so that they could again be better exploited by Barrick Gold and other mining corporations that are mostly located in the British Commonwealth. And only South Africa has had the right to access nuclear power, largely because up until like 1993 or 94, they were an apartheid racist state with most, you know, a minority white governance. So they were allowed to have it, but no one else was. Russia has thrown that completely overboard and has opened up now the door for massive third, fourth generation nuclear technology for Egypt, for every country in so-called dark Africa. It's a breath of fresh air. People have a lot of hope for this.
Well, that's something that's interesting is that I love nuclear power as it relates to solar and wind, because solar and wind, like, I mean, it's a good idea. In a perfect world, it would work, right? In a perfect world, we could just rely on the wind and windmills and we'd be fine, and solar energy that could capture the sun. I mean, there might be a future for that, but right now the technology is just simply not there. This is from an article that was written by Michael Schellenberger, who did a lot of work on this. And he said, this is what he wrote in his work. The reason renewables cannot power modern civilization is because they were never meant to. This is what he wrote. He wrote, between 2000 and 2019, Germany grew renewables from 7% to 35% of its electricity, so solar and wind power. And as much of Germany's renewable electricity comes from biomass, which scientists view as polluting and environmentally degrading, as from solar. Of the 7,700 new kilometers of transmission lines needed, only 8% have been built, with large-scale electricity storage remains inefficient and expensive. A large part of the energy used is lost, is what he said. He also says that in the 20-year subsidies that were granted to wind and solar and biogas since 2000 will start coming to an end next year. He says the wind power boom is over. This is for Germany specifically, but I think it raises a really good point, all of which is simply that if renewables can't cheaply power Germany, one of the richest and most technologically advanced countries in the entire world, how then can we expect a developing nation such as Kenya to implement those same tools and then have success?
Yeah, you absolutely cannot expect that reasonably. And that's the intention, is to get them addicted, to get the world, including the industrial and underdeveloped countries, all addicted to forms of energy, which will destroy and cripple our ability to ever support an advanced industrial society. So these countries, you know, they have it's the richest continent. Africa is the richest continent of the world in terms of what's under the soil. They're being told by a bunch of misanthropic technocrats in the West, people like Blinken, who was deployed there. He just was there and visiting four countries this week. They're being told you are not allowed. It is not appropriate technology for you to use your coal or natural gas that's under your soil. You have to use these green, clean things. Yeah. And ultimately, the quality of the electricity is such poor quality that not only is it unreliable, as the author you just pointed out had noted, but the quality of the energy production itself will never allow those societies to melt industrial steel. You can't even make a windmill with a windmill. You know, that is the opposite of sustainable energy.
So, I mean, that's super interesting that we as Western countries, you know, we relied on fossil fuels and maybe not nuclear power as much, but definitely fossil fuels. And that is why we are, that is largely why we are so successful. And it's such a hypocritical thing when us, you know, well, not us, but these really wealthy, rich, white Westerners who so despise capitalism and what really made them rich in the first place, they have a lack of understanding and an ingratitude, which is the most ugly quality, is ingratitude. And that is exactly what socialism produces, is a bunch of ingrates. People not grateful for what they have and wanting more. And I think it's so interesting that we criticize the developing nations who have not quite harnessed the power like we did. And that's led to our success, but we don't want them to share in the same success. What do you think ideologically, what do you think drives this on the ideological level? Because we know, and we're going to get into what practical measures they want to put in place regarding food, regarding electricity, regarding energy production that are going to absolutely cripple economies across the world and lead to death. But I want to talk about ideologically what drives this. What do you think is the primary ideological driver of these climate change activists?
Well, there was a book that was published that served as sort of the organizing Bible of the what's called the Neo-Malthusian Revival, published in 1972, called The Limits to Growth, after a two-year-long pseudo-scientific study commissioned actually by the government of Pierre Elliott Trudeau, who was a sponsor of the Club of Rome. The Club of Rome itself was set up by a bunch of misanthropic oligarchs yet again, who tried to take the theories of Thomas Malthus, who was a satanic reverend working for the British Haileybury College of the British East India Company's primary school, where it educated its upper level managers. And Malthus put forth a garbage theory that was premised around the idea that human beings and animals are identical, and the laws of animal population growth, like of rabbits or dogs, is exactly right. What is defining the limits of human population, and that humans will tend to grow geometrically as our food resources only grow arithmetically. And with this mathematical formula, he said, okay, now all social engineers have a new power to use the gifts that God has given us, that is war, death, famine, and pandemics, in order to regulate and control the population crisis before it reaches a breaking point. Because obviously with that ratio, if you don't make any new discoveries, new technological advances, right, and you keep on just doing things the exactly way that your grandpa did them forever, yeah, sure, you're going to hit a crisis of scarcity and you'll have a crisis.
Of course.
So he said, you know, the social engineers are morally responsible, and he's talking out of the British Empire, which was the world government of its day, has to then use this mathematical knowledge to control global population, which they did in India and Ireland and around the world. Now, this went out of favor for a long time because people began to realize that, no, he was actually wrong, and that human beings have a soul. We can make discoveries when we're being moral, and that can increase right the bounty of nature and free us from the limits to growth that had previously been binding our potential. Now, unfortunately, about a century after his ideas fell out of favor, they made a comeback. And again, that took the dead bodies of people like Bobby Kennedy, John F. Kennedy, a lot of great anti-Malthusian figures of the West who had to be killed in order for a new age of mm-hmm pessimism around the Vietnam War was set in. And they took new computer modeling technology that could process more information faster and basically make the same thesis in the Limits to Growth book, like I said, in 72, that the optimal population levels that their computer models came up with was about, let's say, about a billion or so, maybe 500 million was the consensus, and that governments should be used not as instruments of and by and for the people, but rather of, by, and for an oligarchy, which had taken control of a certain supranational body of powers, including banking and corporate, in order to advance this population control policy. And that's really been the, I would say, the religious-like commitment by those controlling the Great Reset yeah and other things, and the green energy idiocy, both in the West and in Africa. Mm. That's really their religious-like commitment, is to transform capitalism from being something that was once based upon creativity and creating capital to one that's
innovation,
based upon destroying creativity and destroying capital through a green
religion.
That's
exactly right. Yeah, that's that. I love the comparison to a religion, because for me, it's like there's in the LGBTQ and the transgender movement, or the racial movement with the BLM riots, or let's say the climate movement. It seems as if that there's a religious component to all of these things, with original sin either being white straight men or white people in general, or either you're rich or you have more money. In this case, with climate concern, it's like original sin is capitalism and the Industrial Revolution and really advancing technology to the point where it has allowed for, you know, human advancement and really saving people's lives. How many people's lives have been saved and bettered, and how many people have been able to climb their own way out of poverty themselves? Is one of the most amazing stats. In 1980, before the collapse of the Soviet Union, it was 1 in 4 people were living on a dollar a day poverty. And then after the fall of the Soviet Union, in that 20 years after the fall of the Soviet Union, it was decreased by 80%. Now it's 1 in 20 people that are living on a dollar a day level poverty. That's an amazing stat that tells about the success of free markets implemented in Europe. What do you think? Why do you think the World Economic Forum, these globalists, are so opposed to capitalism? What threat do you think that it really gives them as far as their agenda is concerned? That's something that's super interesting.
Well, the whole fight over capitalism, because there's different flavors of capitalism. And if you are an oligarchy, if you're a feudal, somebody who's into feudalism, who wants to, reduce the human talking cows, you might take on a capitalist costume, but you're really a feudalist at heart. And so if you look at globalization, right, the last, I would say everything personally, everything that we've known in the West from 1971, especially, with the creation of globalization as, you know, a new ideology premised around the stripping of nations from having any influence over economic affairs to the present for the last 50 or so years, especially out of which came things like the Maastricht Treaty, the creation of the euro, the creation of NAFTA. It's all been premised upon an anti-human agenda to, again, use the surface, what looks like capitalism, to justify this stripping of nations from having any sovereign power over anything, and ultimately corralling human beings into a cattle-like status where corporations that are not beholden to the people have more power than national governments, which was part of NAFTA and a lot of the free trade agreements that we've, you know, been, that have been forced down our throats now for decades. Free trade itself, it works when you have an actual, honest, equal playing field of cooperating, you know, of people who actually want to create something better. When you have an equal playing field, it works. The unfortunate thing is we've had, you know, a private supranational interest from the British East India Company, the City of London, that is not willing to play by the rules that they promote. And, you know, I think that ultimately they want to get rid of the idea of the nation state as an institution, because it gives the we the people, so much power to defend ourselves, and to cripple their power. By they, of course, I mean this, you know, international financier oligarchy. So, you know, if you compare the type of free trade discussions coming out of Russia and China today in terms of like the you know, Eurasian Economic Union free trade agreements with India or with Africa or Egypt, or China's free trade agreements with its Pacific partners, and you compare that to what we did under NAFTA or the euro, it's two very different ideologies. One in the Eurasian zone actually wants to create wealth. They're pulling people out of poverty at rates we've never seen in human history and building major projects with a private sector that is robust. Whereas here in the West, where we've fallen under the sway of this oligarchy for so long, we're crippling and destroying our productive, our small and medium businesses. Even our bigger businesses are now also being jettisoned. And we're reducing people into squalor. So it's two different intentions animating two different, what appears to be two different, It appears to be free trade being promoted across the board, but there are different intentions animating the different applications of free trade.
Well, that's a very interesting insight. We are going to continue with more of this after the break, everybody. Thank you. We're going to go to break right now.
You should hear what Brian McClain is talking about.
The fallout, the supply chain, the financial fallout. This stuff is all just marching onward, all completely marching onward, all in the name of defending the perfect utopian democracy that exists in Ukraine. That's what we're told they have. And we all have to suffer at the pump. We have to suffer via supply chains. We have to suffer watching hyperinflation happen and recession set in while we send billions of dollars over to support the utopia of Ukraine. All right.
Brian McClain on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I view Al Sharpton as a poverty pimp.
Terrorism from white supremacy is the most lethal threat to the homeland.
I walk outside every day in fear of white supremacy right here in the middle of the hood. Okay, yeah, right.
My grandparents had a cross burned on their property. We were slaves in the past. We're free now.
I never seen a white supremacy in my life. Never, and they can't point to one. Where the hell are they? I wish somebody would introduce me to a white supremacist. I would like to talk to them and take pictures with them, because I never seen one in my life.
Biden says that the country is systematically racist. You know, I almost want to look at him and say, haven't you been the system for the last 50 years?
He's the one that sponsored the 1994 crime bill, which unequivocally basically targeted black men in black neighborhoods.
The polarization. The left versus right, the black versus white.
Pro-choice against pro-life.
I work for Black Lives Matter. I'm sorry that I scared you.
People have had to make it like they're apologizing for their whiteness.
And could you just please apologize for, you know, for your white privilege?
What's more disheartening to me is that those who are within the black community are allowing for that to take place.
So really what we're dealing with is a cultural Marxism that Joe Biden and all the rest from the left were trying to inculcate into our society.
Well, you were once the oppressor, so now I must be the oppressor. You don't avenge evil for evil.
It's okay to say disparaging things against white people. Our former president, Barack Obama, said it, you know, about old white men are a problem. except when it comes time for him to fly around on their airplanes and ride around on their yachts or be their next door neighbors or endorse them for president like Joe Biden, then old white men are okay. This is their last gasp.
What do progressive socialists really want?
Watch Systematic Deception at salemnow.com.
For the news and views you can't hear anywhere else, it's TNT Radio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Trish Wood Show. Again, I am your host, Owen Stevens, filling in for Trish Wood. I am from upstate New York. I've just moved to Michigan. I run my own show, The Owen Stevens Show. In my hometown, I broadcast on the radio every week. I'm also the producer of The Shannon Joy Show right here on TNT on Fridays at 6 o'clock, at 6:15 sometimes. It is a wonderful... Shannon is absolutely wonderful. I love filling in for her. So you can find more of me there. Additionally, I want to point out just again how fantastic is it that TNT is bringing you conservative radio uncensored. Like, that's something that's so amazing. So what I want you guys to do right now, go to TNT on their Instagram, follow them right now, where you can keep regular, where you can find regular updates about the shows that they are doing. Give them a follow. It's so important that we support TNT in what they are doing, because it is allowing us to get a voice of truth in an age of unreason. Everybody, welcome back. Matt Arrett, how you doing again? You doing good still?
I'm still okay. I'm hanging in there.
Still okay. Hanging in there. Yeah, we're getting through. I want to talk to you now. You are the editor-in-chief of the CanadianPatriot.org. Now, I want to talk about Canada right now. I'm so interested in Canada. Justin Trudeau specifically. And one of the things that had happened recently around where I live that I actually attended was a trucker rally. This is something that was so fun. So a bunch of these, I don't know if you guys know this, what happened in the States. What happened is a bunch of trucks basically were boycotting COVID measures and decided to drive the length of Canada in protest. And that was something that I myself attended to watch at the Rainbow Bridge, right at the border between New York and Canada. So I want to talk about Justin Trudeau and some of his policies. If you could use one word to describe Justin Trudeau, what do you think it would be? I'm going to say narcissist. What's your one word to describe him?
Shadow.
What was that again?
Shadow.
Now explain that.
There's nothing there. It looks like you're dealing with a thing, a person, but there's nothing there. It's he's a shadow. He's you got to feel. I feel a little bit of pity for the character, because he's been living in his father's shadow, and his father was like a high level his father was a smarter puppet who was much more self aware of the operation he was assigned to put into play. But ultimately still a puppet. Now he's celebrated as sort of like a prince of Canada. Like, his father is a godlike sort of thing that's been created and put into the zeitgeist of a lot of Canadians. And he's been living in his father's shadow. His entire life has been handled, controlled. He's been surrounded with flatterers. He's got nothing really of substance within him that's ever been permitted to grow. Nothing of self-criticism, he really thinks he's awesome. Like, you know, you see him being iced out at G7 meetings. No other world leader respects him. They all see he's a very low level intellect. They won't even let him come into, you know, he tries to shake the hand of Bolsonaro and Bolsonaro gives him the cold shoulder. Xi Jinping won't give him the time of day, and he still thinks he's awesome. So he consumes his own flattery, which is just pathetic. And he's got handlers like Chrystia Freeland. You know, there's certain, like, Chrystia Freeland is sort of the Jarrett, the Valerie Jarrett to Justin Trudeau's Obama. He himself is a shell of a shell, a shadow of a shadow, walking his father's shadow. And he's disposable, kind of like a younger version of Biden. There's, again, nothing.
Yeah, that's exactly
that
the point I was
going within him. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a great comparison. Yeah. Joe Biden and Justin Trudeau are very similar in that they don't speak with substance. They speak completely ideologically in these weird narrative driven, these sentences that often don't make sense, and these things that are completely based around this leftist servitude. And one of the things that's so amazing, and this relates really to what we were talking about in regards to the climate, is the anger of farmers and the desperation, I should really say, from farmers in Canada. From Breitbart, Canadian Prime Minister. He ignored cries of anger and desperation from farmers and provincial officials last weekend by pressing ahead with a climate change agenda that will dramatically reduce Canada's use of fertilizer. The same ruinous strategy that drove Dutch farmers into revolt and destroyed the agriculture of Sri Lanka. So this is like, he's just continuing along the war of these climate change activists. It's like Greta Thunberg, just, you know, the leader of a country. Why, like, and this is so, we have examples of this not working in Sri Lanka. We have examples of this not working in the Netherlands, all across Europe. What a war on fertilizer. What on earth is going on in Canada right now as opposed, with farmers concerned?
Yeah, I mean, these are people who have been pushed to the brink. They've already been living, off of... Most farmers in Canada are not able to really eke by with the job of farming alone. They have to work secondary jobs. Right. Most kids don't want to go into farming. That's why the average age of farmers is already over 60, 62, 63, as far as an average age. It's really been targeted for a systematic destruction. This didn't begin with Justin Trudeau. It's been going on for a while. Look, for example, the green ideology of turning our food into fuel for cars to save the environment. 40% of U.S. corn goes into bioethanol. Same thing for Canada.
Yeah.
We've already been burning our food in an age where 15,000 children die unnecessarily of starvation every day. This is such an unnecessary type of crisis. So now they're doubling down with the whole excuse of the, you know, pandemic crisis, climate change crisis. They're saying, oh, what an opportunity this has been. So now we could just like hit the, instead of pulling back and trying to restore the viable part of the economy and maybe, you know, protect the people from the oncoming collapse of the banking system, which is where the real controlled demolition is going to happen. It's a giant bubble economy, right? Based upon unpayable debts, highly leveraged into the trillions, quadrillions even of derivative dollars. That's going to blow. That's a weapon of mass destruction that's been set into our economy that we're supposed to take the hit for, rather than having the Wall Street financiers who gambled and lost take the loss. So rather than do that, they're saying, okay, we're just going to prepare the groundwork for that oncoming collapse. But in the meantime, we're going to destroy whatever is viable to sustain life. And agriculture is a big one that's been, you know, Justin came out saying, you know, he endorses the idea that farmers are the number one climate offenders. They're number one enemy of nature. So, he's asking for his head on a pike, I think. It's pretty
well. It's because wild. They feed us and they view humans as a cancer to the earth. Justin Trudeau, these globalists, these people that say you'll own nothing and you'll be happy, that you'll be basically an indentured servant, a slave. This is not far removed from slavery, what the World Economic Forum is pushing forward. Right now, they even introduced measures to start introducing insects into people's diets. They want people to eat bugs because they're so afraid of climate change. One of the things that struck me very early on about climate change was just how much of a lie, how deep the lie goes. And it's all about making people afraid and fearful. I always say this, a fearful populace is a subjugated populace. A fearful populace is a subjugated one. If you're afraid, if your moral compass is confused, if you don't know where to turn to, if you have no idea what the truth is, then it's super easy to rely on these ideologues that come down with their authority that they have and tell you that the solution is to just simply blindly follow them, and that we have to destroy our economy and tear everything down. To me, this is very Marxist, because Marx argued that the only way that we could really come out of this class warfare, logical step forward, I should say, is to destroy everything, to destroy the system, because the system itself is the problem. And that's really very much what you see from governments in Canada with Justin Trudeau. I mean, it's like he has green blinders on. They're moving ahead with their goal of net zero by 2050, net zero carbon emissions by 2050. So zero carbon emissions. It's like, is that even possible?
It's possible if you kill everybody. I mean, you know.
Yeah, you have to seriously kill everybody.
Well, I mean, we are carbon emitters, right? Like you breathe in oxygen, we exhale carbon dioxide. And that's something that trees like, you know, it's food for trees. And the fact that we have, you know, hydrocarbons that we burn for industrial production that also produces a certain amount of carbon dioxide, which again is a gift for trees. You know, if you're a farmer, you have a greenhouse. You buy carbon dioxide emitting machines that you install into your greenhouse to raise the natural 400, you know, parts per million, which is what naturally sort of occurs by on average in the atmosphere. They want farmers who have greenhouses want to raise that to 800, 1,000. They go as high as 1,400 parts per million for CO2, because what happens? The plants, the vegetation inside the greenhouse love it. They grow faster. They grow more vitamin rich. There is no evidence whatsoever that CO2 even causes temperature changes. That the we're given these simplistic computer models that we're just told, you know, all of the experts agree. Don't you know, prove that that's true. You just say it and repeat it. And these computer models have an assumption, which is wrong, that carbon dioxide has been proven to cause temperature, cooling or warming in the greenhouse. That's never been proven true. And in fact, there's wonderful studies that have demonstrated the opposite. And in fact, when you look at the longer cycles of warming or cooling, the ice ages and what have you in Earth's history,
exactly,
what we find is that the CO2 doesn't lead in the dance with climate or with temperature. Temperature changes first, almost always, and then you have a lag of a few hundred years, and then you have an increase or decrease of CO2 in accordance with things like, well, what caused the Earth to warm or to cool? Well, what about that giant thing called the sun, right? And what about cloud covering? People don't even look at these
basics.
Well,
we have more trees than we've ever had on the Earth. That's something that I don't understand. It's like, and additionally, you talked about the population. A lot of people are worried about population, like getting, you know, too many people, that there's going to be, that somehow there's going to be too many people. But when you look at our birth rates, if you look at the rate by which countries are, you know, making new people, it's dramatically lower than it was. And we're not even at replacement rate, meaning that more people are going to be dying than are going to be replaced by birth. I mean, we see this in China right now. They're facing a disastrous situation. Japan, especially, facing a disastrous situation where a huge percentage of their population is over the age of 60, and they're just not having kids. So I think one of the main problems is actually population, decline, not population increase. What do you think of population increase or decline? Where do you think we're going to go? Are we going to get up to 10 billion people, like some of these people are projecting, or are we going to go back down to maybe 6 billion? What do you think is going to happen with that?
Well, Owen, I mean, that's a great point. And, you know, we're sort of moving right now on the steam, on the momentum from the past generations. But like you said, we're not even reaching, you need to have, I think, 2.1 children per woman in order to have some sort of a threshold met where you don't collapse your population. We're far below that currently.
Yeah, we're vastly below that.
Yeah. So the rate of change is tapering off. There is still an increase. And we, you know, under the current trajectory, you might hit 9-10 billion, but the trajectory itself is tapering off so fast that that's going to be collapsing really quickly, especially as the baby boomers who are currently very old, start really dying off in higher numbers, which I'm certain people running the Biden healthcare reforms want to accelerate in this, you know, Soylent Green type of mass euthanasia program. That's another aspect of the Great Reset. But no, I mean, we have to be able to heal that. And that is not natural. People are told, oh, there's a natural equilibrium that all species are defined by. You know, when there's an abundance in nature, the rabbits procreate more. And then when there's a drought, less abundance, the mommy rabbits eat the baby rabbits. And yeah, that happens in nature. And we're told, oh, that's why it's natural that our population also collapses, because we overexceeded our boundary conditions, our limits to growth. We've offended the gods of nature, of Gaia. Which, I use this religious-like terminology because it really is this Gaia-like pagan worship, which has made a comeback.
That's absolutely true.
The reality is that's not natural. There's no reason that has ever been proven why there is ever an absolute limit on human population growth. A healthy population is a population where you have more, you see the value of your citizens, of the babies, not as pollution machines, but rather as creative discoverers, right? The universe is a creative, infinite place of discovery, and with a lot of problems, there's so many problems the universe throws at us. More minds is more blessings to make more discoveries to share in order to make the world better for ourselves, for nature, and for I would say even the universe as a whole. God's creation is made better with more beautiful people who are, and I say beautiful in the highest sense of people who have a beautiful soul, who are given access to their full potentials, that can then execute those potentials by making those happy discoveries. And we're not given that under any form of imperial governance, where it's a master-slave dichotomy, where we're told, oh, the many have to be born into a slave status, believing the shadows are the only reality that there are in the cave wall, and only the masters born into special families, usually inbred, which is another absurdity.
The Rothschilds and those types, exactly.
Yeah, they keep it in the family. It's a very shallow gene pool. Those are the preferred people destined to have hereditary power over the masses. This is what the American Revolution was all about, was refuting that idea and establishing not a system of hereditary governance, but a system of inalienable rights, a new system of consent, of rule by consent of the governed, which was never before seen.
Yeah. Exactly. And I think that it ties very well into what the Bible says. It's really very biblical in that God says he created us in his own likeness. He created us in his own image. And because we are created in his own image and likeness, and because he loves us, because he has established us with dominion over the earth, he has given us those rights. That's something that the founding fathers understood. That's something that conservatives should be fighting for. But one of the things that the World Economic Forum and these globalists want is, rather than individualism, they want collectivism. They want people to not see themselves as individually valuable, but see a group as individually valuable, and not individually, but see the group as the primary, as opposed to the individual, which is something that's very, very dangerous. We saw how that played out in Stalin's Russia. We saw how that played out in Mao Zedong's China. It results in unimaginable death, cruelty, and enslavement every single time. One of the things that they also want is servitude to nature. One of the things that was written on the Georgia Guidestones was that we need to keep everything in balance with nature, which directly opposes God giving us dominion over the earth. The Bible says that God gave humans dominion, not nature, but he gave humans dominion over nature, and we should be fruitful and multiply. But it seems to me that the Georgia Guidestones and the World Economic Forum, the globalists and their agenda, is actually the antithesis of biblical revelation, the antithesis of what God intended for humans to be. And we're going to get back to more of this right after the break, everybody. Thank you for tuning into TNT. We'll see you very soon.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
In case anyone is still unclear about what is meant by the deep state or the DC swamp, consider this. Federal magistrate Bruce Reinhardt, who signed off on the FBI's warrant request so that it could send three dozen jackbooted thugs marching through Mar-a-Lago Monday and rifling Melania's closet, had to recuse himself from the Trump versus Hillary Clinton civil suit back in June. Judges have to recuse themselves from cases where either there's a conflict of interest or an inherent bias against one of the parties. So he had to recuse himself in June, but in August he's competent to sign a search warrant for the president's private residence? That's grounds for impeachment, and it's grounds for disbarment. Meanwhile, Eric Holder was out Monday telling lies about President Trump and justifying this search warrant. Make no mistake, Joe Biden is not running the country. This is Obama's third administration. Trump 47 needs to be much more ruthless than Trump 45 ever was. No more deep staters in high positions. Looking at you, Christopher Wray, Kevin McCarthy, Mitch McConnell. No more, these are nice people, I'd hate to see them get hurt. No more Mr. Nice Guy. Gloves off, Mr. President. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
You have the right to know. The right to know about culture. The right to know about the economy. The right to know about technology and to know about sports. You have the right to know about education and politics and the weather. You have the right to know what's happening abroad and in your backyard. But above all else, you have the right to know that this right is under attack. And we must work to protect it. Because in order to be free, we must be informed. Understand the threats. ProtectPressFreedom.org.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Welcome back to TNT Radio and the Trish Wood Show. I am Owen Stevens, filling in for Trish Wood. We have Matt Arrett on the line. Matt, I hope I'm pronouncing your name the right way. Is it Matt Arrett?
Yeah, you're doing it perfectly. You're one of the few people I've ever met who have done it perfectly right off the bat.
See, dude, I was so worried when I had you on. I was like, oh my gosh, listen, this guy's got a weird last name. I don't know how to pronounce it. I'm just going to go with something. And I went with Arrett. Hey, killed it. Let's go. See, prayer comes true. He answers prayers.
Yeah, God was smiling upon you.
So, yeah, he's, right now, let's see. I want to talk also, I want to get your opinion on something that's really interesting. I've discussed with Shannon Joy a lot about this topic. It's mass psychosis, specifically mass formation psychosis. And I think that this relates really well to what we're discussing about when it comes to climate change and energy and the discussion about that in education and how kids these days are learning that humans are a fundamentally destructive force in the earth. They're not learning that humans are a good for the planet. They're not learning that it's good to have kids. They're not learning that they are innately valuable. Instead, they're learning that they're either racist, they're a sexist, or that they are a victim of a system that hates them. It's like both of these messages are destructive to children. Both of these messages are destructive to their development and to what they want to do in life. It's like, how are you supposed to be positive when you go to school and you're either told one of two things? You're told you are an oppressor because you're white and you hate black people because you're white and you're racist no matter what you say. Or the other option is you are oppressed and you'll never make it because they hate you because you're black. Those are the two things that they're telling kids. So how are you supposed to claw your way out of that situation? It's impossible. It's this mass psychosis that has been introduced into the education system where kids are not taught what to think. I mean, kids are not taught how to think. They're not taught how to think. They're taught what to think. They're taught specific, like, narrative driven talking points, and they only know those and they can only say those. So as far as the climate is concerned, it's humans are destroying the earth, period. There's no discussion, debate, or talks to be had about it. That's all they care about. They don't want to discuss it. They're not interested in facts. Rather, they're interested only in the pursuit of ideology, in the pursuit of this radical narrative and this agenda. And I want to talk about mass psychosis. Have you heard of that before?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Matthias Desmond's concepts.
Yes.
Yeah. I think they have a high value right now to cut through a lot of the insanity.
I think so, too. I think one of the things I'm going to bring up 4 points. What he says is super interesting. And I think that I don't know how you think that this relates to what we're experiencing right now in the States. But there's 4 things that Matthias Desmond points out, which are the fundamental prerequisites to mass formation psychosis. He says, number one, a lack of social bonding, that in the world today where social media is concerned, that is disrupting kids' social lives, and the COVID-19 lockdowns that were perpetuated on us by the tyrannical governments across the world. But this lack of social bonding then contributes to number 2, a free-floating feeling of anxiety, and which is basically feeling anxious without knowing why. Number 3, that contributes to high levels of free-floating aggression, feeling aggressive and frustrated without really knowing why. And then lastly, which is the most devastating effect, it contributes to a lack of meaning and a lack of sense-making. And this is the tragedy that I see in a lot of people's lives right now that do not have Christ, that do not know Jesus, or do not have a God that gives them that fundamental meaning, or the Bible that can give them that meaning, that they're searching for meaning somewhere. And where do you find it? And that's one of the things that all of these prerequisites make mass formation psychosis so dangerous. And we're seeing it play out right now in America.
Yeah, I think it was good that he was able to put some meat on the bones, because this is something which has been there shaping human history as a major problem, and something which has been understood by social engineers going back, I think, to the days of ancient Babylon in various ways. That
I agree.
You know, there's certain triggers you can induce a human being into activating in order to have them weaponize themselves and to destroy their own access to their own soul as having an influence over the shaping of their conscience, how their identity forms in their lives. And thus you can have when somebody is what you might call disassociated or alienated from a social group, since we are social beings, you know, and we're not an island unto ourselves. We model as babies and growing up, we model ourselves off of examples of adults. And ideally, you want to have good role models to tap into and help the kid, through life, find their best possible self that they could be. When they don't have those role models in society and their family units, or let's say the school system is used to increasingly disrupt that, you can get pretty predictive behavior from said victimized society that will react in certain foreseeable ways, kind of like a computer program would, because they don't have the higher access to their conscience, their creativity, their higher values that would normally, moderate their choices in life. And so their choices would be animated by fear, by alienation, and ultimately by ignorance and self-hate, which is never very good for formulating a proper citizenry. And they would tend to, find themselves in mobs, maybe chanting as a pile of books are being burned, thinking that they're doing something great for humanity. Or let's say heretics are being burned. It could be anything that would, what causes people to fall into a mob think. It's ultimately, they don't really have access to their true knowledge. They were given, they were told to memorize what a body of experts told them is the gospel of their day without them thinking about why it's true. Like, what's a good priest versus a bad priest? A good priest actually helps you use your own mind as an instrument that God gave you to think about why the lessons of Christ are true. Somebody, you know, who's like moderate, controlling a bunch of feudal serfs are just telling you, exactly. No, whatever my interpretation is as a high priest is how you have to, what you have to believe unquestioningly. Right. Okay, well, that's going to be a fascist mob. So
I know. Well, I mean, that's so interesting that you said that, because I think that what I said, and Matthias, he points out that the first prerequisite to this mass formation psychosis was the lack of social bonding, and how governments are trying to deprive people of that. And that's one of the things that they don't want. They don't want people to be, you know, cohesive. They don't want community. They hate community. They hate the local, you know, communities that used to thrive and exist in America and throughout the world. And that's something that they're fundamentally battling against, because that social bonding puts the power in people's hands. That puts that in people's hands, and they don't really have control over it. Rather, what they want is they want to introduce social bonding in a different way. What they've done right now is they have deprived people of social bonding, whether it's by lockdowns, whether it's by the introduction of these social media platforms, whether it's by the internet, whatever you want to say. But for people, what they've then done is they've offered a way out. They've said, okay, right now you have no social bonding. Right now you're isolated, you're locked down because of this, you know, false disease that we are, you know, lying about, but you know, they're not, that's neither here nor there. But what they've done is they've offered a way out. They've said that obeying us, if you just obey, if you obey what we say, if you put on a mask, if you stick a needle in your arm, if you do everything we say, obeying the tyrants leads to solidarity, which humans crave. That's the social bonding element. They basically took it away from you, only to give it back to you with these stipulations. You guys can come together, but as long as you obey. You guys can come back together, but as long as you don't speak this or don't speak that, as long as you agree. That's one of the things that I found so interesting. It was manipulating human desire and human need for bonding with other people, and then using that to service their own agenda.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, the idea of meaning, you know, Viktor Frankl made a point in his writings, who, you know, there's a man who was a psychiatrist who lived through the Holocaust, and he noted that the people who were more able to overcome the challenges of the brutal conditions of the Holocaust, or of the camps, were those who actually had found purpose and meaning in their lives, and those who had given it into despair were not. They quickly succumbed to the conditions and often died. We hunger, just our bodies hunger for food and water, our souls hunger for hope and for meaning. And you have to give them, you know, you can give people reasonable meaning that's actually tied to natural law and what we're actually designed for, because we are created in a universe of law. Thus, we have a purpose. And, you know, when we submit our sense of freedom to that sense of purpose, which we resolve that, you know, ancient duty freedom paradox, you know, my every time I have a law to obey, I'm reducing my freedom. Well, not really. If you obey a law of nature, right, God's law, you increase your freedom. If you discover and obey a law of aerodynamics, you have a freedom to fly, right? Tap into that, you resolve this: is it good for the society I'm a part of, or good for me? That's a fake problem. Everything that is good for you is also good for the society, and vice versa. That's why JFK said, "Ask not what your country can do for you, but the inverse." It didn't mean he was a communist. It just meant he's like, we all have a natural mandate to be a part of and contribute back to a society that is going to last
before
and after we die.
What you're getting at is hierarchical, like the hierarchy of skill. The fact that some people are, and this is what the left can't stand. These people, listen, I just graduated from college. I just came out of the woke college system, and man, I went to one of the most woke schools imaginable. Absolutely ridiculous. One of the things that they hate is that people can be better at things than other people. They like hate, they can't wrap their head around that. They don't understand that. They hate that. Some people are just going to be better at things than other people. They have a higher capability. They can't stand that. One of the things that they can't stand is that hierarchy of skill. They hate those hierarchies, because to them, the only thing that exists is power. So if they see those hierarchies where some people are good at some things and people are really not as good at them, then they view that as oppression. That's viewed as the people at top are now oppressing the people who are not as good. But what you really find is that people who are really good at something, there's an incentive to have that hierarchy there, because the people that are good at those things, everybody then benefits based off of their skill. Everybody benefits based off of what they are able to provide, what innovation they're able to make, what they're able to do and provide for humans. That's how we move forward. Everybody collectively benefits from individuals seeking their individual purpose. And I want to read something right now that Carl Jung wrote, and this is such an amazing insight that he wrote, and this is why he's so incredible and amazing. But he says this. He says, "Indeed, it is becoming ever more obvious that it is not famine, not earthquakes, not microbes, not cancer, but man himself who is man's greatest danger to man, for the simple reason that there is no adequate protection against psychic epidemics, which are infinitely more devastating than the worst of natural catastrophes." Which is that statement right there, I think, perfectly sums up what we're dealing with right now. The suicide rates in America, the suicide rates across the globe are spiking. It's because there's a lack of meaning. There's a lack of meaning. And I think it's really driven by the fact that we're trying to take God out of everything. We're trying to remove Jesus. We're trying to remove God, the Holy Spirit, Judeo-Christian values out of our system. And it's very purposeful. And it's an attack and a demonic attempt by the enemy to remove God from this country. What do you think about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, The founders of things like UNESCO, even the World Health Organization, people like Julian Huxley, who founded UNESCO, and G. Brock Kisholm, who founded the World Health Organization, were explicit in their many writings that the primary their identification of what caused wars and the general psychopathy and malaise, mental disease of society, was located in these delusional beliefs that prevailed in the world at large. In the idea of God as a force that actually will have a role to play in the shaping of your identity and the choices you make, your family and your nation state. So nation, family, and God were the three targets, which both of these figures and many others who came under their umbrella organizations over the ensuing 80 years, all targeted as what needed to be cured of and replaced by, because you can't just take it away. You have to give people something in its stead if you're going to break their faith in these three core things. And the choice of that was found in the ancient pagan Roman imperial mandate of the Gaia cult of Sibyl and other things that were what organized for, 800 or so years, the Roman Empire, as part of like a system of cults mandated and controlled by committees of 13 with Sibylline books that managed the hedonistic revels of the masses who would then be permitted to, ultimately they would be permitted to sacrifice to whichever god they wanted to that would be mandated. They would often have a certain Earth Mother Gaia worship status. It would be very paganistic, like I said. And it ultimately denied the idea that there would be a unifying principle of morality or truth anywhere in the universe, which is why the Christians were targeted for destruction early on by Nero and it continued for a long time. So we have that today, and ultimately it's not durable. It's a society of mediocrity. It's a religion of mediocrity. You get rid of your best people who had the greatest skills and qualifications to do anything good or solve problems, leaving you with a bunch of malleable, pliable idiots who don't know how to think for themselves. And now, what are you going to do? What are you going to do with that? Right? You can't even build.
Well, you're going to be dependent. You're going to be dependent on people that provide you the answer. That's exactly right. Yeah, I think that's the spirit of dependence that they're really trying to create. They're trying to make people, they want people to live in a perpetual system of fear and chaos where there's no truth, where there's no discernible direction to go in. Therefore, it's you must despair. You have to give up and then relinquish control because individual liberty has. I think that what they're trying to do is say individual liberty has failed you. Individualism has failed you. This whole system that was set up by the American Revolution in America specifically has failed you. The system is collapsing. It is creating disparaging results because there's unequal outcomes that people face. So the idea and the logic behind it is that since there are unequal outcomes, there must be discrimination. There must be discrimination somewhere along the line, and we can't do anything about it. So we have to tear the system down bit by bit, fundamentally. So what I want to do is give you a few minutes to talk about your upcoming work, talk about what you're doing next, and things that you'd love to plug in and let people know about what you are doing.
Yeah, sure. And absolutely. And, you opened up the whole door to the whole Frankfurt School social engineering that really is at the heart of critical race theory and everything else. And this whole Great Reset of the culture. That's the whole discussion unto itself. But yeah, thank you for the last couple of moments here. I guess if people want to know a little bit more about my work, they can go and pick up my books. I've published a 4-volume series on the untold history of Canada, as well as a 3-volume Clash of the Two Americas, which is easily available on the CanadianPatriot.org website. I also manage a nonprofit organization with my wife, Cynthia, who's another writer for Strategic Culture, an organization that publishes various forms of analysis and history on what's really going on. And that's called risingtidefoundation.net. So we do, you know, weekly lectures that we host with various experts touching on various fields. This week, we're going to have something by Michael Claridge, a professor and a scientist who's in charge of the Sapphire Project. And he's a leader of the Electric Universe group. So if people want to get, you know, come in and listen to these things, they can just send us an email at CanadianPatriot1776@tutanota.com. And I guess I'll just leave it with that.
Well, that's so awesome. It has been a pleasure and a privilege to talk to you today. I am looking forward to talking to you in the future. We're definitely going to be doing more shows together. Thank you for coming in and giving your perspective. It was incredibly valuable. And everybody, we are going to see you right here after the break for another very special guest. So tune in, everybody, after the break.